Welcome back to Easy Being Green, Lessons in Sustainable Business. It's a very hot day here in the southwest of England, so I am recording this with all of my windows and doors open. So you might just hear the beautiful tweets of some birds in the background of this intro. I hope you enjoy that if you do. I've got something a little bit different for you today. I had the absolute pleasure of chatting with Olivia Siboney, who, amongst other things, as we will find out, is the head of impact and growth at Angel Investment Network. And I'll let you listen to Liv's excellent explanation of what that is, what that means, what Angel Investment Network is, in the conversation, which, as an aside, is itself an excellent example of simple and clear communications that your granny could understand. All of that will become clear in the conversation, so do listen on. I was so excited to chat to Liv because I really wanted to ask her about what happens when the world of impact and sustainability collides with the world of investing and finance, and how best to align profit with purpose. If you are an entrepreneur, a startup founder, or simply someone with an idea for a sustainable business, this is an episode that you can't miss, as when it comes to connecting with angel investors and understanding what makes them tick, Liv really is an expert, and she shared so many practical pieces of advice in this conversation. Liv, welcome to the Easy Being Green podcast. I'm so happy to have you here today.
Thank you so much for having me. I've been really looking forward to our conversation.
Me too. I would love to start learning a little bit about you, if that's all right. So, reading off your wide range of experience, you're the co-founder of Impact Amplified. You're the head of impact and growth at Angel Investment Network. And you have this amazing solid history of supporting entrepreneurs, particularly women in tech, to grow their businesses. So love you to start today by telling us your story in two parts. Number one, what challenges are you addressing in your role today? And number two, how did you get to where you are today? What was your journey?
Great. Yeah, absolutely. So I'll do my best to put this succinctly because my journey's been very meandering to get here, but somehow I got here. So to start with the first part of your question in terms of the challenges, I think really one of my really key challenges is really helping people understand that investment needs to be aligned with values, mm-hmm. So that profits come as a result of the social and environmental impact that is being delivered. And that essentially is kind of reframing the paradigm, turning it on its head so that, you know, profit comes as a natural result of investing rather than profit being the mission in itself and the end goal. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a sort of subtle but really fundamental shift in priorities that really sort of still honors the fact that money is really critical to running the world. You know, it's a really amazing invention, money. It's really what's enabled us to be able to live, have all the wonderful lifestyle that we do have. But at the same time, it's not actually as tangible as the social or environmental benefits, such as clean air or better health or gender equality. So how can we look to, you know, reframe that? That's really, really important to me. And I guess sort of a sub challenge, the only other one I'll mention for here that sort of lines up to that is really from a people perspective. And really that sense of, you know, the more people read the news, the more I feel that people feel really sort of disempowered and hopeless and overwhelmed. And that brings this sort of sense of apathy. Instead of realizing that, you know, every government, every organization, every brand simply formed of individuals who are collectively forming them. And that means that we each have the power to change, whether that's as a citizen, as a family member, a consumer, a business leader, an employee. You know, we each wear all of these hats and we can ourselves affect change within those different systems, within the different hats that we're operating in. And I just feel really strongly about helping people realize that the way that we can continue to have hope in the world is to realize that hope is a really active act. Very badly phrased. Hope is very active. And it is something that we do rather than just passively have. So I think those are the two really key things that fire me up.
Oh, I love that. Hope is active. I think that's such a perfect way of putting it. That actually plays really closely into a thought that I'm just having as you're saying that, it, around hope and that apathy and the danger of the apathy when you feel so overwhelmed. And I really loved the way you said there about putting on the different hats that we wear as citizens, as family members, as friends, and in the world I live in, which is the marketing world, you know, there's this, you're a consumer. And I think that also has power though, as a consumer.
Absolutely.
That also has power, you know, you have buying power and things like that, which is actually a really nice segue to my next question. We're talking about buying power, which is about profits. So a common misconception that we talk about quite a lot on this podcast, and I hear from people, and when I talk to people who are just entering maybe the world of kind of sustainability, quote unquote, is that you cannot be a purpose-led business if you want to be profitable, that those two things, purpose and profit, have to sit separately. So thinking about that consumer hat, and what are your thoughts on that?
Absolutely. And actually, if that's okay, I was thinking of, can I answer that from a business hat?
Yes.
But leading to consumer. So if I may give an example, there's this really wonderful tool that I've recently come across, which I find so helpful. And it essentially sort of helps you understand what long-term change can look like and how you can play a part in that. And therefore, naturally, how you can derive a profit from being more purposeful. Okay. So the tool that I've sort of come across is called Three Horizons. I don't know if you've ever heard of it.
No, that's a new one.
But essentially what it does is it says that at any one point in time, there are three patterns or systems that are operating within one bigger system. So you've got the current pattern, which is called Horizon One, which is essentially the dominant pattern, which is the status quo that we're operating within right now. I'll then give an example. Then you look at Horizon Three. So Horizon Three is essentially what your ideal future looks like, that we are all kind of looking to live in. And that could be a nice kind of dream that doesn't feel so sort of realistic maybe right now. And then in the middle, you've got Horizon Two. And Horizon Two is essentially sort of exemplified through innovators, and they're the ones who essentially can help us get towards that ideal future, and they're essentially kind of the stepping stones. So to give you a specific example, if you take the system of manufacturing, because you know, I was sort of thinking of, you know, a lot of the people you might work with might actually manufacture products that are being sold to you know, consumers. And if you think of manufacturing, so take Horizon One, which is the status quo, and that is that linear trajectory of, you know, what's called cradle to grave as a production method. So you take, you know, extract materials, usually in a very unsustainable way, both environmentally and socially, from the ground, put them into production, and then they go to landfill, and that is the line. So that is Horizon One, that is the status quo of now you could sort of think, okay, what is the ideal future of how this could work? So in an ideal future, which is your Horizon Three, you could think of everything being designed for circularity. You can imagine this nature-based approach to the life cycle of products, from creation to obsolescence, whereas they're disassembled, reused, or, you know, easily recycled. You could then look at using renewable or regenerative materials. You could upcycle waste materials. And you can also look to, you know, have better sustainable sourcing with ethical practices that are going to give back to the community. So that's your sort of dream world, and that would be amazing, but it probably seems a little bit idealistic and far off. So then you come back into the middle and you look at what's called Horizon Two, and what are the innovations? And what are the innovations that we can see now that are signs of building towards the steps, but towards that sort of perfect ideal future? And really, this is where the entrepreneurs come in. This is where, you know, where I focus all of my energies. It's sort of thinking, okay, what system is each entrepreneur operating within? What does that ideal future look like? And who are the ones who are creating products, systems, innovations that build towards that? So to give you examples, you can take entrepreneurs who are, you know, these are entrepreneurs I actually work with. So, you know, taking food waste and turning it into construction materials, into dashboards for cars, into lamps and tables and things like that. really, really cool. They use like really innovative technology, literally all from, and not 100% from food waste, but majority food waste and mycelium, that links it all together. Yeah, it's really cool. And at the same time, it traps the carbon because it's stopping that methane, which is the worst, from being released into the air. Or you can have people who are turning shoes into running tracks, or you've got people who are developing AI platforms that enable better matchmaking of individual companies to some of the surplus resources and materials that are no longer used for other people. So those suddenly, those are real life examples of people that I work with, and it's just like that's really cool, and that is the signs of people building things towards a future that we actually think could then become reality one day. So I really like that framing. When I found it, really resonated with me, because that helped me sort of think of the really big picture that any entrepreneur might, you can think of it as a consumer as well, right? You can think of it with any hat. Mm-hmm. And then what little signs do you see of that happening now? And let's bank on those. So I guess that's really where I sort of focus. And to roundabout way to answer your question about profit and sustainability, profit and purpose, is for me, then they're perfectly aligned, because for me, those are the guys of the future. And, when we're looking in a world where everything is just increasingly in turmoil and feels so uncertain, it can be really scary, because nothing is as it is. And the more we go, the more it's not seeming to get any better. We all just thought, after the pandemic, things will get better. No, it did not get better after the pandemic. And nothing in the press tells us that anything is going to carry on better and getting better, including the financial markets, when you're looking at the trends that they're operating in. And yet, actually there are incredible opportunities to be taken. At a time of uncertainty and turmoil is actually the time when people are suddenly open to new ideas. It's when you're really uncomfortable that you're suddenly thinking, when you're in your comfort zone, why would you want to change anything? But now people are increasingly out of their comfort zone. And I'm talking about investors, for example. This is actually a time to come about and be innovative, bringing about new narratives around the ways that actually their money could work for the better, for the long term, that will actually give them a good return. They just need to, you entrepreneurs have this incredible opportunity to reframe the paradigm and give a story of a genuinely credible future that we can all have hope and excitement towards, and help investors feel excited and empowered that they could finance that world and make a return from it. It does just need, better imagination, good narrative, good storytelling, genuine, credible, with a business model that works. But I think, imagination and creativity are really, really important here, as well as obviously being effective. And what I mean by that is also, it is quite a meandering journey. It's not a hockey stick growth curve. It's not even really a straight linear curve. It's probably a slightly roundabout, messy journey. But if you stick with it and you are, think clever, creatively about the right collaborations, the right allies that you can bring on board along the way, and use those opportunities to bring the right people along the journey, with you on the journey. Actually, for me, that is exactly where the money comes from. That for me is, the more, if you're really mercenary, invest there, you just be a bit more patient and creative.
And what's the I guess being not in the world, I mean, I've been involved in pitching before as part of a startup, but not being in that world every day like you are, what's the kind of reaction from investors to this, to understanding that hockey stick growth isn't part of this world? Are they buying into that? Are they excited about it? Or have you seen kind of two sets? You've got like the traditional investors that just are never going to change, and a new set that is like really excited about.
100%.
Really?
Angel investors in particular are all individuals. So they all think very differently. I think it's important to note that on the whole, angel investors will come from a more traditional world and background and way of thinking. And we do still live in a world where, so it's a huge amount of effort for impactful entrepreneurs to bridge that gap, but it is upon them to do it, to help the investors understand this. And my advice is to speak their language. And the way to speak their language is not to go, we need to change all of these systems, but to essentially build a narrative that helps them feel safe and included and empowered, excited about the money. You become an angel investor because you want to make a return on your money. Talk money, but talk money in a way that shows that the way you're going to make the money is this way. So it does require sort of, you know, good storytelling, but a very empathic storytelling. Don't make people feel threatened or afraid, or, you know, don't make them feel like you're sort of that horizon three, slightly far out idealist. Show them that there is amazing opportunity in these innovations and show them why that works in the long term. But I would say, it, you know, I would bring all of these elements in first, and then once you've convinced them that this is interesting, then you talk about the growth curve. Because if you first go in talking about the growth curve, be a little bit sort of
a squat straw.
yes, exactly. You know, they're going to run a mile. So talk first using language that resonates with them, and then once you've caught their attention, then they'll be more open to understanding why the growth curve might look different.
Interesting. I want to come back just really quickly to something you said there about innovation, and it links back to what you said about hope earlier on. And I think it was really beautiful to look at that discomfort as motivation. And there's a wonderful quote, isn't there? And I don't know who said it, and I'm probably going to butcher it, but it was something along the lines of, I had to make you uncomfortable, otherwise you would have never moved. And it feeling, isn't it, that you can take that discomfort with what's happening in the world, and feeling, you can either feel powerless to make change, or you can do something about it. And it depends what your talents are, but there are so many creative, innovative, skilled, technical people, human beings out there that have ideas, and it's just about putting those into practice and then putting them into the reality of the world, isn't it? And I just thought that was a really lovely sentiment, that taking that discomfort and making something incredible out of it that could actually change the world, even if it's a tiny little bit of the world that you change. If more people do that,
That's such an important point. We can only ever change a tiny little bit of the world, and change happens one step at a time. And I think that's really important to remember, because, you know, sometimes it gets really overwhelming. You just look at all of the problems and you go, oh God, I don't know what to do. I don't know where to start. I'm going to do nothing, because what's the point? It's just all too big. And that's just not the case. If every single one of us feels that we can have a tiny little drop of impact, that is what makes, you know, the whole ocean. And that's so, so, so important. And that's why actually I feel really passionately about collaboration, because if people increasingly look to collaborate rather than just compete with each other and feed into each other's businesses, all of that grows exponentially. So, you know, you can sort of exponentially grow patterns of hope as a result of meaningful collaborations where everyone benefits, including financially. But it does need to start with actually that humility to be okay to just change one little thing.
Interesting. Humility, I love that. So somebody's got an amazing idea, they're starting to put into practice, they go, okay, we need some investment to take this to the next level. How do you come into the picture? You know, where do you come in terms of like putting a startup with an angel investor throughout the network? what could that startup, what could that entrepreneur expect? Like, what's the next steps? Give us a picture of what that looks like.
So, actually, we're a couple of hats. So, from Angel Investment Network's perspective, essentially, it's actually an online sort of DIY platform, but there's a huge kind of ever-growing playbook out there with loads of sort of tips on how to do it, but it is very much DIY. So the easiest way to explain it is imagine a dating platform, and it's using algorithms to matchmake entrepreneurs and investors. So what happens is, as an entrepreneur, you go onto the platform and you upload your pitch, you upload all of the information about your business, including, you know, the most relevant keywords, in a way that essentially you're just trying to put your best self out there as a dating tool to see who's going to be really attracted to me, and just think, you know, and think in those terms, because, you know, it's not a swipey platform. But, you know, people are scrolling through loads and loads of different investors are scrolling through loads and loads of different opportunities. Mm. And there are lots of opportunities available. And, you know, people are increasingly wondering where, you know, worried about where they're going to put their money. So it is a time of sort of extra challenge in terms of raising money. So you need to, as quickly and succinctly as possible, make yourself the most attractive person to that other person, which come back to my point of empathy of just think about what it looks like for that other person and what could someone else find attractive about you, essentially, but obviously you being, in this case, your business and what you would bring to them that would make them excited. So imagine it that way. So, you know, I'm an entrepreneur, I'll go onto the platform, I'll pay to put my pitch on there. And then the algorithm puts me in front of investors who are interested in the relevant topics, and then they'll browse. And then if they decide they find you interesting, there's a messaging system, and then you can message each other and then sort of take it from there. That's why it's sort of entirely DIY. What I do really is actually try and educate on both sides at a broader level. So I won't work individually with entrepreneurs so much as really talk about how this can change to help both the entrepreneurs and the investors look at this in a way that, you know, helps them better matchmake, I guess, in that sort of impactful way. And then on the side, I also run a consultancy, Impact Amplified, where I delve deeper into the B2B side, so business to business, helping impactful entrepreneurs connect with businesses. And that is digging much deeper into helping individuals connect with, you know, corporates and other businesses that they could work with.
Oh, amazing. So angel investors in particular, do they always have an idea of the types of businesses that they want to invest in? Do they have an idea of their perfect partner when they go into this? I'm thinking maybe of like somebody who's new into investing.
It's such a good question, and it's a very hard one to answer, because ultimately, I mean, Angel Investment Network has got, I forgot the numbers, but it's got over 350,000 angel investors registered on there. Wow. Globally. And they are all individuals. I mean, anyone can be an angel investor as long as they qualify. And qualifying essentially means, have you run a big business before, that you understand what money means, or do you have a whole bunch of cash yourself? That means that, you know, the regulators are not so worried if you kind of take a risk on your money. So that could be someone who's made loads of money in financial services. It could mean someone who's inherited loads of money. It could be someone who has, you know, been director of another company. There's such a broad spectrum of ways that people got to that money. Mm-hmm. And then there's such a broad spectrum of interests. So you might have people who are, you kind of want to think about the people that you want to attract. Mm. So you probably want to attract a balance of people who really specialize in your industry and know a lot about it, who can add value beyond just the money that they're bringing. So let's, you know, imagine the manufacturing, and you are manufacturing bottles that are made out of upcycled plastic, like we were talking about, I heard about recently. you know, who knows about that industry? And if you can get investors who are involved in that industry, that's fantastic. At the same time, you could also get people who just really care about you know, waste and the oceans and water and all of that. So you might also have some people who are there from a kind of sentimental value of sort of passion of wanting to kind of change the system. You might also just have people who are like, ooh, I could see how there's good money in that because I've understood how this works and don't really know anything about it, but I'm just going to take a punt on that one. So what's very hard as an entrepreneur is trying to figure out who is interested in what. So my advice would be, in particular on Angel Investment Network, when initially you're just out there to the world and you don't know who is going to look at your pitch, be as just literally imagine you're pitching to your grandmother and just make it so easy to understand because you have no idea who is going to look at your pitch. Once someone connects with you, do your background research on them, look at them on LinkedIn, look them up on Google, be a private investigator and just do all of your detective work and then decide what, or ask them as well. I'd be curious to know, what is it that interested you about my business? And then, you know, to talk their language, are they coming in from an emotional perspective? Are they coming in from a professional industry perspective? Are they coming in because they just see there could be loads of money in this? Do they like something about me because I put a video on there? You know, it really depends what exactly made them tick. So make it really, really understandable and simple to granny initially, and then adapt your language according to who you're speaking to.
Wow, you really need lots of skills, don't you, in entrepreneurship? You need to have like the ability to create something amazing. You have to be a good storyteller. You need to then make that story accessible to somebody with it. What's the average reading age of the UK? Is it 12? I think it's the average reading level is age 12.
Right.
So have to make that accessible in that sort of language. You really need a lot of skills. So you probably need a few people, don't you?
Exactly.
Really,
I was just going to say, get help. And, you know, in my very first business, when I, you know, launched my first startup, you know, I know what it's like. You're strapped for cash and you're overstretched, but you're really worried about money. The point is you're trying to raise money. So like, I don't want to spend money. I need money. It's fine. We can do it all ourselves. And honestly, we just lost so much time and missed out on so many opportunities. And I know it's really, really hard. I know it's so hard, but just be creative and like exchanging skills with someone who's much better at you at something else. And then you could offer them to then help them in return, you know, with your skills that you're good at. So just be creative in finding ways to get the people who I'm really bad at making things really, really, you know, easy to understand and succinct, but, you know, pay someone who's really good at comms to do that and they'll do it so much better for you. In fact, comms being one of the key ones because we're also stuck and passionate in our bit about our business and about the problem that we're trying to solve. That one of the key mistakes entrepreneurs do is they get lost in the features of all of the things that make it great rather than just going, what does it actually do?
Yes.
And you just, that's just what everyone does because you're just lost in that detail. So actually one of the key things you can, one should pay for is the person to write it and make it look, you know, attractive both visually and wordily.
Yes, absolutely. I think also you can probably sometimes you feel like to be impressive you should use big technical words, but that's no good if the person you're pitching to has no idea what you're talking about, because if they don't understand it, the consumers or the end user not going to understand it, or the purchaser's not going to understand it. So
yeah, that's, it's literally really a sales pitch. It's like, yeah, just don't make someone feel stupid. Make someone feel good and excited.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Amazingly, I've gone completely off script in my questions, but we've actually answered quite a lot of the stuff that I wanted to ask you about. So that was very good. Just in normal conversation. So I love that. I love these conversations. So I want to come back to you a little bit, Liv. What is it? You've talked a little bit about this. I think we've got a bit of a picture of what drives you to do what you do. What gets you out of bed in the morning to put on all of the different hats that you wear and go for it each day?
I think, yes, it's probably sort of hopefully come across in our conversation. I just feel so strongly that I think I was born with this. I would I guess I don't know if it's a curse or a gift, but this sort of sense that I really, really want to leave more behind than I came with. And it's something that's always really fired me up. And actually, for most of my career, it's been really troubling because I've been involved in careers where I just wasn't able to do that. And I was working in very sort of extractive businesses and ways. And that just made me really, really miserable. And it's really when I got to launch my first business in 2012, where I got everything very wrong. but what an amazing learning journey. Managed to sell it and it's still going, actually. So just scraped through.
That's great.
but it's really that, you know, that sense of sort of purpose that, you know, I think, you know, what made me tick is to realize that you can align profit and purpose and that they're not completely separate. And then actually, you know, we can positively contribute to people and planet, creating, you know, joy and happiness and hope and all these things while having a, you know, exciting business model that actually has a sort of financial, good financial return on it. And the reason the financial return is important for me is because that's what makes something genuinely sustainable compared to, you know, charities, which are wonderful, but are constantly having to beg for money and constantly having to think short term because they are just kind of just only able to survive as long as that next pot of money and that next pot of money, which makes it very, very uncertain and unable to plan for the long term. Whereas if you can bake a profitable business model into something socially and environmentally purposeful, you have so much more chance of affecting change. And I think with that, what I realized that I really, really love is just making individuals within that tick. I feel so privileged that I'm surrounded by the most incredible people in my daily life, you know, the entrepreneurs, you know, the investors that I speak to, who are full of hope and optimism and really feel empowered to be the change in a really practical way. And, you know, in lockdown, of course, that was my entire world because I spent my entire days on Zoom, and I left lockdown feeling, you know, extremely hopeful and optimistic. And it was really interesting to then go out to the open world and go back to sort of seeing people in real life who are not just the people I chose to speak to on Zoom, and realize how much of an outlier I was and how much, you know, the sense of despair and hopelessness had been amplified in that time because mostly people were just watching the news and feeling like everything was, you know, lost. So I feel, and that really saddened me, actually. And I just think that every single one of us has the ability to just shift the way we look at things and realize that there's so much hope. But as I was saying at the beginning, you know, it just needs active engagement into it. And that, you know, the more I can help people feel empowered, the happier I become, because selfishly I get to be surrounded by more positive people and that makes me feel better.
That resonates with me so much, because it when I sit in a room with people from Cambridge Institute for Sustainability Leadership, and when I say sit in a room, I mean on Zoom.
Yeah.
I come away with like this energy and like, yes, we can do it. We can make such a difference in the world because I'm surrounded by people who think the same as me. And you're so right. And then you go out there and I'm just going completely off topic here, but I think one of the hardest things about becoming an adult is realizing or like kind of leaving school and like your little hometown and going out in the world, we're starting to realize that not everybody thinks the same way as you, and having to deal with other people's opinions on the world, which is, of course, is born out of their worldviews and how they're brought up and the life experiences they've had. And you can have a little echo chamber. I've never thought of that in lockdown, about how small that echo chamber became, of the, because you're only choosing people to talk to via Zoom. So having little online quizzes with my friends, or talking to my mum on the phone, or talking to my husband, and that really got much smaller and smaller. And then there was the echo chamber of social media, which was all doom and gloom, and you could choose where you put put yourself, but then when you go back out into, like you say, back out into that wide world, and the world opens up again after our little virtual life of lockdown, yeah, it was quite confronting, wasn't it? So I love, again, taking that confrontation and finding the hope in that, and hopefully that has a ripple effect, and so that negativity and that apathy and disempowerment that is beyond that little echo chamber dissipates.
Yeah, and I completely agree. And I think, you know, while it's uncomfortable to be around people who might think, you know, who might be sort of very negative or despondent, or just think completely the opposite from you, again, like we were saying at the beginning, you know, you could get really annoyed with those people, or you could use that to kind of motivate you to just keep, to just not give up. So I think, you know, there is such a, I love that quote that you, you know, mentioned at the beginning. It's, you know, it is the discomfort that does really help get us up. And we can use that as a positive motivator rather than something that we just close ourselves to and then create another barrier.
I love it. I've got pins and like tingles. Fantastic. One last question. This is the question we ask all of our guests on this podcast, which is, do you think there is such a thing as a truly sustainable business yet?
No, I don't think there is. I don't think there ever will be. But that is because I see sustainability, even ideally kind of looking towards regeneration, which is the kind of next evolution of it, as a constant journey. And I think it's just, you know, there is no one constant state of happiness. You're just constantly working on sort of things around it. And it's the same with sort of sustainable or regenerative business. While there is an end goal, you can never actually reach that end goal. The end goal is just the end of the business, I guess. So if you see it as a journey rather than an end state, I think it's something to constantly work on. And I think the other reason that's important is because it's really important to keep that curious mind open as to what else can I do, rather than going, oh god, am I ever going to get there? It's like, no, you're never going to get there. But that's kind of the point. But that's also what makes it exciting, right? It's like, oh, what are the other elements that I need to bring in? And just feel that your business is something that is alive. And if it is sustainable, if it is regenerative, you know, imagine, you know, the plant world, it's constantly bringing something new and evolving and adapting to what is around. And that is its life. And you could be, you know, the chief leader of that, the chief orchestrator of that. And what an exciting opportunity. So I think my no is because it's can be even more exciting than an end goal.
Absolutely love that. And we're always learning, aren't we? And they're always learning. And this world that we live in of sustainability or impact or whatever other names we want to give it, and is continually evolving. And every day we learn something new that will impact on that journey. And you can improve what you're doing. Every day there's something new that you can improve what you're doing. So I agree with you and what in your sentiment there, Liv.
Thank you.
Well, that's an awesome place to stop this conversation for today. I've so loved having you on this podcast. It's been really wonderful to get to know you a bit better. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having you and for this wonderful podcast. I've listened to your other episodes and I just found them so inspiring. So I was thrilled to be invited. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Liv. Oh, how good was that conversation? I really love talking to Liv. I was left feeling so inspired and really, really informed. She definitely does know how to explain things in a real simple way, even though she said she was terrible with succinct comms. I don't think that came across at all. And I'm taking away with me that make it simple enough that your granny could understand it. I think that's such great advice. Thanks so much for listening to today's episode. I really enjoyed listening to my conversation with Liv as much as I enjoyed having it. If you want to learn more about Angel Investment Network, you can do that by heading to the website angelinvestmentnetwork.co.uk. A link will be in the show notes and in the episode transcript, which you can find at easybeinggreenpodcast.com. If you liked this episode, it would mean the absolute world to me if you could subscribe or follow this podcast on your favourite podcast app, and I'd be even more grateful for your 5-star review, which helps other people find these conversations. If you'd like to get in touch with me about this episode or have ideas for a future one, the best way you can do that is by following at the Easy Being Green podcast on Instagram and dropping me a direct message there. I hope you can join me next time when we'll be heading to the Southern Hemisphere, virtually of course, to chat with Scott Gooding from the Good Farm Shop about, amongst other things, regenerative farming, what it is and how it can help combat food supply and sustainability issues. Until then, stay collected and don't forget to keep it green.